First, we take a look at the future of a sport that people seem to love, hate, or in some cases love to hate. For years now, the game of golf has been plagued by declining participation, high costs, courses closing, and a lack of new golfers getting into the game. For some golf fans, there's a concern that without some kind of change, the game could become more or less obsolete in the not-so-distant future.
And that hasn't escaped the attention of the Professional Golfers Association of America, or PGA. The organization recently launched a task force to find ways to attract new golfers and get lapsed golfers out on the course again. But with golf being a game deeply rooted in tradition, what are the possibilities of change, and can it be done while preserving the sport that's lasted for hundreds of years?
Ashley Mayo is one of the members on that task force. She joins us now to talk about golf's current situation and some of the ideas being floated to freshen up the game. Ashley's also a senior editor at Golf Digest magazine. Ashley, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
So we just mentioned there are a lot of concerns that golf might be on the decline. What's your assessment? What is the state of golf today?
I think all of these concerns are a little bit inflated. The first quarter of the year happened to be a very cold, long winter. And
true.
So, you know, all those kind of statistics that said, you know, golf was on the decline, rounds played were less than they were last year. I mean, golf is an outdoor sport. It's very much dependent on the weather. This kind of idea that golf is dying couldn't be farther from the truth. And also the idea that we've lost 5 million golfers over the last 3 years. Well, we haven't accounted. No one talks about the 5 million that have come into the game. So, while golf hasn't necessarily grown over the past 3 or 4 years, it has not declined.
Well, it's the PGA is at least concerned enough to start this task force to figure out ways to start new golfers. You're part of that. There is at least a recognition that, hey, maybe we need to reach out to bring some new people into the game.
Well, this task force has been kind of wrongfully pegged as something that will help save the game from dying. And it's not. It's just a task force of people, getting people together to think of cool ideas and to come up with neat ideas. Even if something's not broken, you kind of have to keep it fresh and revive it. So we're just getting together and meeting to talk about ways to, keep golf fresh and keep it interesting, not necessarily because it needs to be saved from anything. I can't think of any other sport that has two monthlies, two weeklies, and an entire television network devoted to it. Golf is very healthy.
So what accounts then for the health of golf as you see it? You're saying it's thriving despite a lot of attention in the media to maybe a decline. What accounts for it doing so well?
I'm not saying it's thriving. I'm just not saying it's not on life support, as so many people might think it is. It's not. Some of the things that we're doing on this task force are thinking of ways to make golf more accessible. So one of the big hurdles with golf and getting people to become golfers is convincing them that, you know, golf is worth the time and the money that it demands. Well, what if it didn't demand 18 holes, or, you know, 4 hours of someone's time, or, you know, the money required to play 18 holes? What if golf was a six-hole round, or meant 3 holes, or it meant 12 holes? So we're trying to come up with ways, first of all, to get people to accept the idea that if they play 3 holes, it means that they did play golf, or if they play 6 holes, it means they played golf. And also we're trying to think of ways to convince golf courses to offer 6-hole rates and 12-hole rates. That's all important.
Well, one of the old cliches, and I'm thinking back to 1950s comic strips and beyond, is the frustrated golfer smashing their clubs because they can't sink that putt. Is there talk of making an option to make it easier maybe for kids entering the sport or first-timers to avoid that level of frustration and keep them coming back?
To avoid frustration, golf is a tough sport. It requires a lot of technical kind of things. You know, it's a very technical sport. Mm-hmm. So that is just going to be tough. And it's also one of the kind of beauties of the game. You know, it's not easy. And the challenge is what keeps people, some people coming back. But yes, it also frustrates other people to no end. And so, you know, besides the fact, I guess to get juniors involved, you know, there are family tees. So these are, you know, tee markers that are set up in the fairway, at a lot of resort friendly kind of destinations. And, you know, there's this idea of that 15-inch cup that the PGA of America and TaylorMade are experimenting with, which is, you know, four times larger than the standard golf hole. And it's just a lot of fun to play. So, yes, there are ways in which people in the industry are trying to make golf easier.
Now, golf is a game rooted in a lot of tradition. What's been the range of reactions to the ideas of having an option, maybe for first-timers, of a larger hole like that 15-inch hole?
Mm-hmm. The 15-inch hole is never meant to replace
right.
the standard hole. It's just meant to be an alternative to the standard hole. So, you know, while the traditional – this idea is not marketed toward traditionalists, you know – traditional golfers are very happy with the sport, and we're not afraid of losing them at all. This idea is geared toward that golfer who is frustrated and who's looking for something that's a little easier and more fun and quicker. So, you know, the two holes can coexist on the same green, and, you know, the traditional golfer can just continue on with his or her own game and play with a golfer who is a little more of a beginner and needs that kind of more forgiveness. So, for example, I played golf, foot golf on Tuesday.
Foot golf?
Yeah, it's kind of like combining soccer with golf. And the soccer, kind of the foot golf holes were on the same golf course as a regular golf course, you know. So golfers were playing through us while we were playing foot golf. Me and my foursome were playing foot golf. So, you know, you can kind of coexist on the same in the same platform, you know, in the same space. But we did our own thing and we played foot golf while other golfers were playing the traditional sport. And no one minded, you know, we were just all out there having fun.
Well, you're obviously somebody who loves the game. I'll be honest, I've done mini golf. I've never been out on a proper green. Can you just share the appeal? What is it you love about getting out and golfing?
Oh, there's something about being outside and, you know, having that challenge of hitting a small white ball into a hole, you know, and just kind of it mirrors life in a lot of ways in that not all bounces are going to go your way, even if you hit the perfect shot. But, you know, you just kind of have to go on and hit the next shot and try to figure it out from there. You can't dwell on the past or fear the future and just kind of stay in the moment. You know, I've played a lot of sports in my life, and golf is definitely the one that has taught me most lessons and keeps me grounded in many ways. You know, a lot of people say that golf is their escape, but more and more now, especially, you know, people my age, millennials and stuff like that, we can't really afford to unplug, you know, for 4 or 5 hours and just totally ignore our phones. And so more and more now you see that golf courses and you know, professionals who work at golf courses are accepting the idea that cell phones are allowed on the course. And so I'm, you know, more than able to keep up with my life and not, you know, completely ignore my surroundings because I can't afford to do that for 5 hours. But at the same time, I can completely just relax and, you know, channel my energy into golf and, you know, focus on the game at hand. So it's really awesome.
I've got a pretty strong hunch that if I were to go out and try it, I would be very bad at golfing at first. Could you, if I were to give it a shot, how would you recommend I get started?
Definitely on the range with a teacher. I think a mistake a lot of people make is that they look at the pros play and think, oh, golf swing, that's easy, I'll make contact, you know. But a lot of times those first few swings that you take, the first several swings you take, you'll miss the ball, you know, and that's okay. You know, that's all part of the process. So I would definitely recommend, you know, taking a 30-minute, just very kind of basic lesson at a driving range, where a teacher can teach you how to kind of grip the club and how to swing and what to think about. And then from there, after a few sessions on the driving range, not every single one of them has to be with the teacher, then go out and play a hole or two, if you're lucky enough to have that access to kind of just be able to play a hole or two if a friend of yours is a big golf nut or is a member somewhere and you can tag along, or play nine holes. A lot of golf courses offer nine-hole rates, and it's the perfect kind of amount of time and the perfect challenge. So I would definitely start on the range.
And I would allow no cameras, no witnesses at all to those first efforts.
Well, the thing to remember is that everyone goes through that. You know, it's just part of the game. There's no need to be embarrassed.
We're talking with Golf Digest editor Ashley Mayo about the challenges facing golf. She says it's alive and well, despite some media reports, and what changes could maybe help bring new people into it, and just the love of the game in general. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234.
And golfers, do you think the sport is still as popular as it once was? Is there anything that you think needs to change to bring back the popularity of golf? And what do you think could convince people who've stopped playing to start playing golf again? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about the future of golf. Some media reports have said it's on the decline, maybe on the way out. Our guest, a lover of golf, says not so fast. It's alive and well, still a lot of people interested, and some slight changes could help bring even more people into the sport.
And you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you love about the sport of golf? And do you think that love has been communicated to the next generation of golfers? How does that happen? Are you worried about golf, or do you think it's doing just fine? Call us at 800-642-1234, and you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Our guest, Ashley Mayo, stays with us. She's senior editor at Golf Digest magazine.
I'll go right to our callers now. Sandy is with us in Bloomer. Sandy, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I think the cost is what's driven a lot of golfers away. Like, it's local courses, if you'd offer family packages or get these kids at a lower rate, that would get them interested, and then they would continue on. It's a great exercise for the whole family. I just think cost has driven a lot of people away.
Sandy, thanks for the call. We also heard from James on Facebook, who says making golf less expensive would make it more popular with him. Ashley, is that a concern that a lot of people look at golf and say, hey, the financial barrier to entry is just too high for me?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no denying that golf, between the, you know, greens fees and the golf equipment and just all the gear that you have to buy, can be quite expensive. It doesn't have to be, though. You know, there are a lot of municipal golf courses that offer resident rates, you know, so discounts, major discounts for residents, and twilight rates as well. So after 2 or 3 p.m., greens fees go way down in price. And, you know, a lot of these kind of resort-friendly or resort golf courses are family-friendly. And by family-friendly, I mean they have, you know, those set of tees that are in the fairway, but also breaks in price for greens fees for, you know, children. So it does exist. It's unfortunate that not all golf courses offer it, but it does exist out there. And, yes, I totally agree that there needs to be more of that.
Here's maybe a dumb question. If I show up, can I rent the gear there, or do I have to show up with my full set of clubs?
You can rent gear at a lot of golf courses.
All right. Back to our callers now. We've got Sam on the line in Winona, Minnesota. Sam, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I started playing golf about a month ago.
Huh.
And I actually am a tennis player, and it's been quite interesting. It's really hard to... It's really a hard sport, but if you give it time, you'll learn to love it.
So yeah, you say it's a hard sport, Sam, but you're sticking with it. You think it'll pay off if you get through that initial learning curve?
I think it definitely will.
I agree, Sam. Stick with it. you know, there's no other sport is played on such a beautiful stage. You know, you get a golf course is just kind of an art form that you can walk into, and so it's really beautiful.
All right, Sam, good luck with your game. We'll go to Aaron in Madison now. Aaron, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, great to be on the air.
What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I'm actually on my way to play nine holes right now.
Nice.
Right.
I'm fitting it in. I'm a graduate student. I don't have a lot of like extra money, but I use golf as my reward for accomplishing things during the week. And
great.
I look for deals.
All right, Aaron, thank you so much for the call, and have a good, I think, nine holes, she said. Yeah, some of the comments I've seen on the articles that kind of kicked off this conversation, Ashley, is that maybe golf doesn't appeal to young people. They don't have the attention span. But maybe, as Aaron says, it's a way to get away from what you're doing, reward yourself, and take time to do something and devote yourself to getting better at something.
Exactly. And, you know, Aaron's playing nine holes, and that'll take 2 hours. And 2 hours is what a movie takes, you know. And so we all can fit in a two-hour chunk of time here and there. So, you know, that's not impossible. It's not crazy. 18 holes is borderline crazy for some people, especially for people like Aaron, who's a graduate student, very busy, you know, studying all the time. But those 2 hours to just unplug and forget about life and focus on a new challenge is a really kind of powerful way to recharge the batteries.
Aaron, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ashley, we talked some about bringing a new generation into the sport. Are there a lot of schools that have golf teams?
Oh, sure. Yeah, a lot of high schools and colleges have both. Well, colleges have the kind of college teams that travel the country, but also club teams. So, you know, you get that. And then high schools, of course, have high school golf teams. You know, I was a product of my high school golf team where I played with the boys, but then started a girls team. And now they have a great girls team. And then also in college. And it's, yeah, very common.
How much does the appeal of golf to the public ebb and flow with having a star golfer out there? I imagine a lot of people maybe came into the sport inspired by Tiger Woods. Does that help or hurt the game over time?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, every sport kind of thrives when you get that one superstar, you know, with whether it was Michael Jordan basketball and how much interest he generated there, or Andre Agassi with American tennis and, you know, how much he kind of ignited Americans' interest in tennis. Tiger did the same for golf. But so is Ricky Fowler. You know, he's getting a lot of people interested and in making it look cool. And so, yes, having that kind of superstar in golf would definitely help kind of make golf tug at the heartstrings of kind of millennials and get them interested in golf. And we're seeing that a lot with not only Tiger, but with also Ricky and like a Jordan Spieth, who's very kind of emotional on the golf course and just, you know, you need that kind of connection. So yes, absolutely.
All right. We'll take one more caller. We've got Jason on the line in Oak Creek. Jason, hi.
Hi. Yeah, love the game. It's always beautiful out there. The courses that I play at, public, private, they could use more traffic. They need more money to get the greens up the, you know, spuff, you know, and get, you know, the soccer idea is great. You know, brings more people out to the golf course to enjoy their time. You know, and it, as long as you're patient with the game, patient with yourself and the other people, you know, out there on the course, you know, you let them play through or whatever, you strike up a little chat, you learn a little bit about people that you may not normally have done.
All right, Jason, I want to give Ashley a chance to respond to that. Thank you so much for the call, Jason. Golfing is a social activity, Ashley.
Yeah, and that's another kind of thing that people overlook a lot is that more golfers would play more if they had more people to play with. And we're seeing now apps and websites designed to kind of help golfers find golfers in their area and, you know, build their little golf network. So absolutely, golf is totally a social sport. You can show up to a golf course as a single and get paired up randomly with people, but a lot of times people would rather, you know, spend those hours with their friends or with people who they know before they show up to a golf course. So getting people to find other golfers in their area is huge.
Ashley, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking to Ashley Mayo. She is senior editor at Golf Digest magazine. Joined us to talk about the future of golf, some possible changes that could be coming to game, and just share her love of it, too.
Well, something else happening today. It is worldwide Handshake Day, National Handshake Day, a worldwide effort to up our handshake game. It's an effort to get us to recognize the importance and history of the handshake and, I guess, to get us to shake someone's hand.
Yeah, someone that we wouldn't usually shake the hand of. So we put it to the test earlier. We shook hands in our office.
Which we've never done.
I can't recall an occasion where we would have shaken hands.
It was okay.
It was, I don't know, a little awkward. I mean, you know, we didn't really have a lot of cause to shake hands at that point.
I think the handshake is preferable to the cheek kiss,
yeah,
which I try to avoid at all costs.
Better a polite nod, we were talking fist bumps. Our producer Amanda Magnus was making a case for completely replacing the handshake with the fist bump. I don't know. I'm not germ phobic exactly, but it seems like making handshaking or even kissing a thing. I mean, it's just asking to spread germs. Right. Am I a bad person to worry about that?
Yes,
probably.
Yes, you are.
So what do you think? Are you a handshaker, a cheek kisser, or would you prefer to do away with both customs? What would you replace it with? Send us an email. How about centraltime@wpr.org? That's centraltime@wpr.org. Maybe we'll share it on a future show even.
Well, coming up next, we look at some new science that says it's true, Google is destroying our memory. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.